succession number 27340, reel 7.
Alright, bridge reel 7.
After leaving Yokohama on the 2nd of May, we went back to Hong Kong on the 7th of May and stayed there for a matter of about 4 days. Then we went on to Singapore, which takes us to the 16th of May. Whilst in Singapore, the ship went into dry dock, which was the same dry dock that the Queen Mary had been docked, and it's probably one of the largest dry docks in the world. So therefore the Belfast appeared much smaller than it is, or much smaller than it appears to be. And of course, being in dry dock there, we were virtually at one side of the dock, and the rest of it was supported by wood or wooden structure at the other side of the dock. And not the amusing part, but one of the things that happened, of course, is that when you're in dry dock, inevitably the heads are closed. The heads are the toilet facilities on board the ship. So the consequence was you had to go ashore to whatever facilities there were, which were very limited and not very good. And to make up your mind that you want it to go before you want it to go. So we quite a walk to the toilets, and it was quite a trip. However, eventually it was decided that we should go to the Fleet Shore Establishment, or Fleet Shore, I think that was the name of it, something similar anyway. And we went to live ashore in the Fleet Shore Establishment, which had a wonderful canteen with Chinese cooks, had lovely meals there, and we got talking to the waiters, who by and large spoke a certain amount of pidgin English. We were able to communicate anyway. There were plenty of tiger beer in bottles, which was super, and we asked, I remember Bert Knowles asking one of the bartenders if he did read English. Oh yes, he said, I do read books, but take me long time. And Bert said it must get bloody exciting during the last fortnight. But whilst we were in the florist establishment in Singapore, there was a swim pool there which we used for about 3 days, and then it was decided that if we used it anymore, everybody would get some dreadful internal upset, so that was closed down. But nevertheless, we were able to play tennis on the courts, still been built before the war. We had 2 matches of cricket, which I enjoyed very much, and I remember listening on the radio to the Grand National in 1945, and I think I'm right in saying it was airborne. Was that the... No, that was possibly the Derby. I don't know. But whilst I was there watching a football match, a rugby match, rugby union match, I was sitting next to a chap, also from the Belfast. Didn't know his name, but I started to relate the fact that I used to watch Bradford Northern, which of course was a rugby league, and they had a marvellous halfback called Willie Davis, who was a Welsh international. And the guy sitting next to me said, that's strange, he used to teach me at St Bede's School. I said, really? And this man, or this boy as he was then, or young man, he turned out to be Desmond Albrow, who was died some years ago, and he was assistant editor of the Sunday Telegraph. And he was a Bradford lad, and I didn't know how notable he was until I read it in his obituary in the Daily Telegraph. He was born in Bradford in 1925, which when I work it out, he was born 4 days before I was, in January 22nd, 1925. So he was in effect 4 days older than me. So that's reminiscent of a very enjoyable time we had in Singapore. And when my relief came through, we went to Singapore and there were three of us. There was the Chief Petty Officer Towes, Bob Snow, Petty Officer, and a Petty Officer from the Naval Stores, and I've forgotten his name. I know it was a rather unusual name. And we all sort of went for the day and had drink, had a meal out, had lunch out, and we had tea at the Raffles, and then we went to the cinema, and I think we saw the film was based on the Arabian Nights, whose name escapes me. But then we went and had a drink or two, and came back quite happy to the ship, by which time we got back on the ship, and I left the Belfast some days after that, or perhaps very few days after that, and I believe I'm right in saying that Captain Roy Adick just preceded me by perhaps a couple of days, and he went off in a car or a jeep or something of that nature, and the whole, we're still in dry dock, and I remember that as the car drove away, the whole ship's company stood on the well, it was either the port side or the starboard side, because there's only two sides, and cheered him the whole way as he was driven away, and he waved gaily, and that's it, and that's the end of my naval career on the Belfast.
So how did you get back to the UK?
I got back to the UK on a lease and lend aircraft carrier, I think it was described as, called the Atheling, which had been converted from an aircraft carrier, a small aircraft carrier, into a troop carrier. And the whole of the flight deck consisted of bunks, double bunks, packed very close together, because you've been in a ship that was built in Belfast with rivets on, and you got in a rough sea on the Atheling and it started to rattle a bit, you were a bit worried, which I never was on the Belfast. I came home with an engineer and artificer, I think, called Wilkinson. And Bill Lloyd, who was a writer with me, and I can't recall anybody else. I'm not sure whether Captain Dick was on board or not, but I know he came home at the same time. He could possibly have flown home, I just don't know. Other than that, I think Bill and I were the only two from the Belfast. But we had quite an enjoyable trip. We played sort of deck hockey, and I remember going to a concert of classical music. For some reason, perhaps it was saving electricity, I don't know, but we sat in this room, and it was Bill and I sort of crawled into this room, and it was in complete darkness, so we sat down and thoroughly enjoyed it. And going out, we found a notice on the door, officers only, so we crashed the party. So it didn't matter really. And eventually we got back to Portsmouth. And I remember we went ashore on a small vessel, I can't remember what it was. And much to our surprise, above Portsmouth there was still a Baroon barrage fitted up. And one bright stoker said, "Don't you know the effing war's over yet?" And then, of course, I went to Portsmouth Barracks and eventually got home on leave, and I was debobbed some more towards the end of the year.
What were you doing in that period before demobilisation?
I went to Fort Southwick. I went to Portsmouth Barracks and then Fort Southwick. That was sort of the headquarters of... when I say headquarters, it was one of the headquarters for the invasion on D-Day. And it was all sort of tunnels. And am I still on? Oh, tunnels. And I remember we had I was, you know, sort of, I'd have got a beautiful all over tan. Well, not all over, but most of me. And looking very healthy and having had this accident with a laceration of my left buttock. When I went in the showers, I could see people sort of nudging each other and say, he must have been hit by a bomb. Well, I didn't. It wasn't. I just fell down the ladder. However, having said that, I remember a chap who worked in the pits, but it didn't stop him going in the forces after the war. And he came from Barnsley. And I remember at Fort Southwick, there was a room which was still installed as it was before the invasion, consisting of not X-ray, infrared lamps, where you could go down and sort of get an infrared. Well, I'm not saying it's because he was from Barnsley at all, but he went down and he must have sat by these lamps for, I don't know, so long, because he thought he'd get a tan to look as though he'd been out east. And he came, and the following day he was covered absolutely head to toe almost red, because he hadn't the sort of complexion, and he was in dreadful pain. And it really amused quite a few of us that he'd done this. But it was an interesting place to be, because you could see on the wall that were maps that were made for the invasion, and they were just still there. And there were the names of some of these vessels. And I took some of the names down, and as time's gone by, I've completely lost them. No idea where they went, but they went somewhere.
What duties were you doing there?
I was responsible for issuing rum. I'd done it before, and I think they were intrigued by the fact that when I got down to the bottom of the... I was leading it out, somebody else was calling it out, chief, I think. But they were intrigued that every day I managed to get the just teeny-weeny bit, but I had plenty of practice at it, really. So that was it. But very happy days.
And you were demobilised at the end of 1946, were you?
From the Belfast, I was reported back to HMS Victory, which is Portsmouth Royal Naval Barracks. And I was there from the 12th of July to the 30th of August. When I was transferred to HMS Mercury, which is a shore establishment at Fort Southwick, which was, I think it was built during the Napoleonic Wars, way, way back. But it was also a point which was responsible for D-Day operations, and to look round, being a maze of tunnels and reminiscences or memorabilia about the D-Day landings, it was an interesting place to be. And eventually I was demobbed on the 20th of December 1946 and released ashore under Class A, whatever that was, whether it meant physically or mentally, I don't know.
Just one last question, Frank. How do you feel now about having served aboard HMS Belfast?
Very proud.